Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning. I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. Just a quick note that we have a poet in residence at the show today. Roland Giardi Laura from New Eurekan Poets Cafe will join us near the end of each hour to react to a bit of the show with a poem composed on the spot. No pressure. You can get in on the action with a poem about something you've heard on the show in the last month or so. Start your poem with the words, "I heard," and email it to us at Brian Lehrer Show, one word, at WNYC.org. That's Brian Lehrer Show, at WNYC.org. Include your contact information and maybe we will ask you to read your poem on the air. So how much should you be paying for housing? Well, the rule of thumb used by many financial planners is one-third of your income. So for someone making $45,000 a year, that's an annual rent of $14,850 or $1,237 a month. Raise your hand if this is you. Chances are it's not. A new analysis of census data finds nearly one in three New Yorkers, more than 500,000, are paying half their monthly income on rent. For that hypothetical renter earning $45,000 a year, that's a monthly rent of $1,875. And with a faltering economy, slowing the pace of construction and freezing wages, housing advocates warn there could be more of those 50%ers in the future. With me now to talk about high rent burdens and to discuss possible solutions he has proposed is Congressman Anthony Weiner, who represents parts of Brooklyn and Queens. Good morning.
Good morning.
Your staff analyzed U.S. Census Bureau data for this study. What did you find?
Well, we found something that many New Yorkers are going to find intuitive, and that is in recent years, since about 2002, we've had a fairly dramatic spike in the number of New Yorkers that do not pay 30% or a third of their rent, a third of their income in rent, but over 50%. And this is now in the neighborhood of about 28% of all New Yorkers are seeing more than half of their monthly paycheck go right out the door for rent. And what's led to this trend is somewhat easy to understand. You know, we went through this period of booming property values, of booming sales of co-ops and condos that many folks that had apartment buildings converted them, and so there was fewer apartments on the market, and it became particularly difficult in places like the Bronx that has a disproportionate number of lower income and middle income folks. We found that in an area like the Bronx now, 33% of all of residents of the Bronx pay more than a half of their income each month in rent. And the largest percentage increase was on Staten Island. Staten Island had the most dramatic increase over the course of the last several years. So it's not as if this is just some discrete problem that folks are having. So essentially, what's happening is that rule of thumb that you mentioned at the top of the show, that you should spend about a third of your income for rent, is now just a joke or a pipe dream for many New Yorkers.
And we want to hear from you, New York. What percentage of your income do you pay in rent? If it's 50% or more, what do you do when a crisis hits? The car breaks down, your crown falls out. How do you make sure that you have enough money to pay your rent? Do you use that 30% of income rule when shopping for an apartment? Or, as Congressman Weiner suggests, do you just throw it out the window because it's all a pipe dream? Is that rule even relevant here in New York City? Leave a comment on the Brian Lehrer Show page at WNYC.org or give us a call at 212-433-WNYC. That's 433-9692. That big percentage increase you found, Congressman Weiner, in Staten Island from 19% in 1999 to 27% in 2006, what's going on in Staten Island?
Well, a couple of things are conspiring there. One, we have, at the same time we have this pressure on rents, we also have more and more people in the last couple of years who are feeling the pressure of the subprime mess as well. In the last year, we've had a lot of foreclosures on Staten Island. Those people, when they're foreclosed upon, have to go and start renting apartments. Second thing that we're seeing on Staten Island is something that many folks who live there know. You know, they've had a population boom there. You know, more and more people are trying to get that nice lifestyle that Staten Island promises. And so there's a lot of competition for the apartments that are there. I mean, there's a very simple thing that's going on here, Amy. We have an imbalance of supply and demand. You have many, many people who are searching for fewer and fewer apartments that are available. And as with all things in the marketplace, that means that the cost of it goes up. But it's not just the free market that's doing it. It's also the failure of government on, frankly, all levels, but particularly the federal level, to really get involved. At the same time, we're seeing this demand. Section 8, which is a program that's supposed to help those struggling to make it into the middle class, find housing, has been cut. Aid to public housing has been cut. And now we're also not providing enough bonds, tax-free and low-tax bonds for developers who want to develop middle and low-income housing. We're not providing those as well. So there's a lot of things going on at once, but the bottom line is that we have a lot of folks chasing these apartments, and what they're finding is it's driving up the cost.
I'm Amy Edding, sitting in for Brian Lehrer. I'm speaking with Congressman Anthony Weiner, who represents Brooklyn and Queens, the 9th District, and his report on the rising number of New Yorkers paying half their income for their rent. We're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Do you pay 50% of your income to live in your apartment? We want to hear from you. Congressman Weiner, again, I'm a little perplexed by this. We've had a housing boom here in New York City. Apartments are going up everywhere. That hasn't brought prices down at all?
Well, we've had a housing boom, but we haven't had a rental housing boom. What has happened is that more and more people have seen at the very top of the economic ladder have had a very good period of time. If you work in financial services community, if you're a real estate person, you know this. And one of the things that has happened is that as buildings are getting built, they are disproportionately being built as condos and co-ops in the last several years. Those values go through the roof. You know, there is just some stunning contrast that we're seeing. 2 weeks ago, a report came out that showed that the average apartment for sale, co-ops and condos on Manhattan Island, was $1.3 million. That's the average. So you can see that there's obviously great financial rewards for people who are building them, less so for people who are building apartment units. And then the apartment units that are being built are, again, disproportionately for those at the upper echelon of the economic ladder. So what's happening is that for everyone else, there's a squeeze going on. And just to put this in context, about 70 to 75% of all New Yorkers don't buy or own their home, they rent. So while we're talking about the foreclosure mess, while we're talking about property values going up, if you're a renter, you're not seeing a lot of good news in recent years.
Why is Manhattan not seeing more of a rent burden? Your study found it has the smallest percentage increase of all the boroughs, from 22.2% in 99 to 22.5% in 2006. Why?
Well, I got to tell you, Manhattan Island has been defying the laws of economic gravity for some time now. You know, when my colleagues point to some of the foreclosure numbers in my borough of Queens and then contrast it with Manhattan, they say, is that even in the same city? Look, Manhattan is, for many purposes now, a gated community. You really need to have multiples of the normal price in the other boroughs in order to be able to gain access. So Manhattan and New York County has already kind of become a place that only the fairly well-to-do can afford to live. It's basically at capacity for the number of new people that can come in and rent. So basically, they're static in terms of the impact on the middle class and those struggling to make it into the middle class, because so many have already been forced out.
One of your proposals, which you plan to introduce in the House of Representatives next week, calls for recycling unused federal housing bonds. Tell us how that would work.
Well, this is one of the things that goes on quietly but winds up having a very big effect on our ability to build housing. You've heard people talk about 80-20 housing, this notion that if you build an apartment building, 80% of it can be for market, but 20% has to be for those that are trying to afford lower rents. The way we incentivize people to build those is we say, look, here's what we'll do. We'll give you loans at a much lower rate and paid for with these government bonds. Now, in order to get those, you have to agree to do certain things, and that's where the 20% comes in. The problem is that the formula that we distribute this authority, these bonds, is per capita in the whole country. So we get there's the same amount going per capita in Delaware and in North Carolina as there is in New York. And in Delaware and North Carolina, there's not a great demand. They don't have the same types of shortages that we do. So what I'm proposing is a way that wouldn't impact on the budget but would have a dramatic effect for New York is to say that if states don't use all of their authority at the end of each year, it can be recycled for places like New York that need it very badly. I think at the end of the day, the federal government needs to get back in the game at all levels, both in building housing and in helping the private sector build. And the bonds are a way to help the private sector to do what they do best, which is to produce these 80-20 apartments.
But those 80-20 bonds have come under a lot of criticism here in New York City. Some critics charge they still result in unaffordable housing by including the very rich in calculating median incomes.
You know what? It's absolutely correct that there are reasons that we need to fix the system. But one thing that's indisputable is that we need to make sure that we still do provide economic incentives to build affordable housing. I agree with you. For example, I think there are problems at both ends. One, that the lower end is not truly affordable for many people who are at the lower end of the economic ladder. But also, a lot of these programs completely miss the middle class. You know, if you're someone who's a teacher with a couple of kids in the household, like my mother, the teacher with a couple of kids in the household, you're basically too wealthy by these calculations in order to be eligible for any type of assistance. I think we need to move in the future towards not an 80-20 model, but something more like a 60-20-20 model, particularly since that 60%, which is market rate housing, has been more and more profitable in recent years. But whether you think the local use of the money is appropriate or needs to be tweaked, shouldn't ignore the fact the federal government giving these bonds to incentivize this type of development is an absolutely vital part of the formula.
I'm Amy Eddings, sitting in for Brian Lehrer, speaking with Congressman Anthony Weiner of Brooklyn and Queens about his report on the rising number of New Yorkers paying half their income for rent. And we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Are you a 50%er? Do you use that 30% of income rule when shopping for an apartment? Do you think that rule is even relevant in New York City? Brian, in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Good morning. Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning.
I think, personally, I'm a native New Yorker, and I've lived in this town all my life, and I have to say that that 30% rule is completely outrageous. There's no way that someone who is of low income, especially someone of low income, can find a decent apartment in a decent neighborhood with their salary that they're possibly making, you know, and then devote 30% of that to their rent, including, then you throw on top of that utilities, perhaps they have cable, clothes, food, and then, as you mentioned, Congressman, taking care of their own family and themselves. I myself am a middle class earner, and there's no way that I think I'm paying a little more than 30% of my income, and I'm still struggling at this point. And my apartment isn't the greatest thing in the world, and I live in the Bronx. So there's something that I really think has to give here, and to learn that the Landlord Association is considering to raising the rent yet again is just not it's just not fair,
Brian,
to consumers.
Brian, thank you for that call. And Brian raises a good question, Congressman. A lot of your proposals are focusing on the federal government's role. What about the state? What about helping to keep apartments affordable by maybe taking away the luxury decontrol aspect of rent regulations, where landlords are allowed to get rid of rent regulations if the rent of an apartment rises to a certain level or if they put a certain amount of improvements into the apartment?
Well, let me just say, I mean, I think that the state has a role. Frankly, so does the city. You know, one of the things that we need to make sure, you know, we are always going to have a much better fortune at keeping apartments that we have than we are going to be able to add new ones. And one of the things we need to do is dramatically increase the number of HPD, housing preservation development inspectors, to make sure that housing that's out there stays affordable, stays livable, and stays of high quality. But, you know, the problem that we've had in recent years, particularly under Republican rule, and we're trying to reverse it now, the federal government has basically gotten out of the housing business. And no city, even one as big as New York, can really get into the business of building their own housing unless the federal government is helpful. And we, unlike other cities, our public housing, for example, is among the best in the country because we've worked very hard to preserve it and keep it. Well, now the federal government is basically getting out of the business of preserving public housing. The Section 202 program is a great program, specialized housing for seniors. A lot of seniors are empty nesters. They've had their children move out. They now are sitting in two- or three-bedroom apartments. They have no place else to go. The Section 202 program says move into a smaller apartment with specialized services, and then you free up that larger apartment. Well, the federal government has basically gotten out of that program as well. I think the cities and the states have the ability to do more, but unless we in the federal government start doing some of the heavy lifting that only we can do with our deep pockets, you're not going to truly expand the amount of housing that's out there.
Jeff in the East Village, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. I'm a real estate broker, and I actually disagree with a couple of things that Congressman Wiener has been saying. One, a true measure of the value of real estate is not just the average, but the median price of real estate. And because of the large amounts of some of the big condos that have been selling, that's been boosting up the average. But secondly, the rental market has actually loosened up in the city over the last 3 or 4 months. In most neighborhoods of Manhattan, even, especially Wall Street, rents have been going down substantially. Wall Street has seen a decline of like 15 to 20%. But the bottom line in all of it is that real estate is set by the market, and there are lots of places in the city that people can go to rent and actually not pay the kind of rents that are in Manhattan. And there seems to be kind of a little bit of an entitlement sense on the part of people who grew up in the city. I kind of put myself in that category because I live in a stabilized apartment, but I meet people who, over the years, have thought that there's been some kind of an entitlement that they should be able to have an affordable apartment with a doorman right in the middle of Manhattan. And real estate doesn't work that way. But we have seen a significant decline in the value of rentals in the city.
Jeff, thank you for that call. And I remember, Congressman, an article in the New York Times about that. I can't remember how long ago, maybe a year ago, about how rising condo and co-op costs were making it cheaper for people to rent apartments.
Well, you know, it's interesting. That's why we put out this study. At the end of the day, when the rubber hits the road, the best measure is how individual New Yorkers, who I should point out, their incomes are basically flat. You know, incomes in New York City since the 2001 are basically flat. One of the reasons we put out this study is to cut through the different economic indicators and say, what is actually happening with citizens of the city of New York? And what we found, according to the Census Bureau data, where they go and ask people what percentage you're paying, there's been this dramatic rise in the number of people who are paying 50% of their income or more. You know, we didn't get a chance to ask, but, you know, like, you ask a real estate broker, just go knock on a door, ask what some of the average apartment prices are in the community, and, you know, particularly even in places in Manhattan that might be softening some, and you still have multiple of thousands of dollars. And if you consider what the average income is for New Yorkers, they're unattainable. So this isn't simply an academic discussion. When you look at our data, it's about what real New Yorkers are paying, and it's a heck of a lot.
Jesse in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC.
Hi. I just had a quick question. The 30% number that everyone talks about for what your income should be in relation to your housing costs, is that gross, or is that what you're actually taking home?
Jesse, thanks for your call, and that's also an issue that's been emerging on our comments page at the Brian Lehrer Show at WNYC.org. Congressman, do you have an answer for Jesse?
The answer is, I don't know. I've seen a couple, you know, if you go to some of these financial self-help books, you know, how to organize your life, they just say generally a third. I think what we're pointing out here is it almost doesn't matter anymore because no one or so few people are actually in that category. I think the idea is when you're dividing up the money that you're taking home at the end of the month, you know, and you're trying to figure out how to use all of it, the sense is the money that you're taking home, meaning the net that you're taking home, you should try to be dedicating essentially a third. But as we saw in our study, that the stories of it actually being a third are apocryphal for many New Yorkers. And that when you have 50%, you know, I asked my staff to break down how much we're going to people pay 60, 70, and 80%. The Census Bureau only asked up to 50 because they assume that, look, very few people are actually paying more than 50 or 60%. Now we're learning it's more the norm than anything else. You know, we have to realize that one of the things that we're doing is that more and more people are being pushed into financing more and more of their lives. That's a dangerous thing to be doing. A lot of it's on credit cards. A lot of this are loans, and we're seeing how perilous some of the credit markets are. Well, if you're just right out of the box writing a check for half your income, it doesn't leave you a lot of choices except to finance much of the rest of your life.
Thanks for those calls. Our board is full. We will get to more of your calls. We're coming up to a break. We will continue this discussion on how much of your income should you be paying for your rent. Maybe you'd like to reveal how much you're paying in rent by calling us at 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. One last question for you, Congressman Wiener, before we let you go, maybe one or two. Is the junior senator from New York, Hillary Clinton, supporting your legislation?
I know that she's a sponsor of a couple of these pieces. I haven't run it all by her, but these are very pro-New York things, and she's obviously a very pro-New York person. So without Without speaking for her, I'd have to say that she's supportive of the idea of getting more affordability back into the New York market.
And you're still supporting her as a superdelegate?
Big time.
Okay. And you mentioned, going back to your earlier conversation about the federal government really phasing out its role in housing and the state government and City Hall needing to do more. Your name often comes up as a possible candidate for mayor of New York City. Are you running for mayor?
Well, look, a lot of this I look through the lens of my experience. You know, when my parents in 1963 or 4 bought a limestone duplex on a park block in Park Slope for $52,000, they sent me to public schools. My mom was a school teacher. You know, this middle-class squeeze is something that I toss and turn about every night because I'm so concerned about it. I'm the chair of the Middle Class Caucus here in Congress. And I still see a lot of the challenges that we faced in 2005 when I ran for mayor last time, I think still exist, and I still want to be part of the conversation about how to solve them. You know, it's tough after years of trying to convince people I'd be a good mayor to convince you that I'm not still interested, so I won't even try.
Okay, so the answer is yes.
I am definitely still interested in the job.
Great. Thank you so much, Congressman Anthony Weiner, representing Brooklyn and Queens in the 9th District, and his report on the rising number of New Yorkers paying half their income for their rent. We will be taking more of your calls on this issue. The board is lighting up. Call us at 212-433-9692. That's 433-WNYC. Congressman Weiner, thank you so much. And this is WNYC. Stay tuned. Amy Eddings sitting in for a vacationing Brian Lehrer here on WNYC, and we're taking your calls about rent, something New Yorkers love to talk about, how much they're paying for their housing. Your calls at 212-433-9692, 433-WNYC. Are you new to New York City? Have you just rented an apartment? Were you shocked by how much you had to shell out of your monthly income for your rent? Are you one of the 50 percenters that Congressman Anthony Weiner was talking about, paying 50% or more of your income on your housing costs, on your rent? We want to hear from you. You can also comment on our website at the Brian Lehrer Show at WNYC.org. Leon in Greenberg, you're on WNYC.
Hello.
Good morning, Leon.
Good morning to you. Look, this is directed at Congressman Weiner, who I respect as being a very bright young man, but I think what he's been feeding us is political hyperbole. I live in Fresh Meadows, Queens. This was owned by New York Life, and when the tax abatement ran out, it was sold to Helmsley. Leona Helmsley destroyed this place, and subsequently, every other property owner contributed to its destruction. It is rent-stabilized. However, that situation was created by State Senator Bruno, who pressured Governor Cuomo to develop the DHCR. Otherwise, they were going to eliminate rent stabilization. Now, the truth is, we don't learn from other countries, from other cultures. In Brazil, for example, in Spain, condominiums are the thing. If we started this years ago, we wouldn't have this problem today. We want to feed developers and builders with tax abatements who, in the end, the public doesn't benefit from.
Leon, thank you for your comments. Anthony Weiner is no longer with us as a guest, but I'm hoping he's still listening to WNYC and got that reaction to his proposal for more tax abatements. Chris from Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Hi, how you doing?
Fine, thanks. How much are you paying?
We've got rent stabilization, so we're paying about $1,600 or so, which is great, but we have a growing family, and we need to now move. And we would live anywhere in the city, but, of course, the key issue for us is schools. And any neighborhood that has decent schools is really expensive in Brooklyn or Queens or wherever we want it to go. So I think that's an issue that we have to think about, because New York would be much more livable. If there were good schools in every neighborhood, there wouldn't be such a crunch, because there is rental housing all over the city that can be affordable for a lot more people if the schools were good.
And So what's your plan, and are you using this 30% rule of thumb in your planning process?
With the 30% rule of thumb, that would make us be able to afford about $2,500 a month. Now, I know there are places in the boroughs that we could probably live in for that kind of money, which is fine. But again, these are not neighborhoods where the schools would be, you know, as good as the one here on the Upper West Side where I live. So we don't really know what to do. We're kind of at a loss of what we should be doing.
Well, good luck to you. I'm sure you're one of many, many, many New Yorkers facing the same ordeal. And I think your comment's interesting about tying the quality of schools to the rents in a community. Anne from Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Good morning, Anne.
Yes. Hi.
How much are you paying in rent?
I am now paying much less than I did because I got my apartment returned to rent stabilization.
How did you do that?
Well, the reason I called is I took my landlord to court. My apartment, like thousands of apartments in this city, literally thousands, was illegally destabilized, so that when the tenant who had been here for a decade left, the landlord did very cheap renovations, raised the rent by $2,000 a month over what the old tenant was paying. I was lucky enough to have a good friend who had worked as a tenant advocate, checked the rent history for me, and urged me to challenge my landlord. But in my building alone, which has about 120 apartments that I know of, there are at least three dozen apartments that have been illegally put up to a market rent.
So not everybody in your building benefited from your lawsuit?
Well, you can't do it as a group. You have to do it individually. Some people found out past the four-year limit to challenge the rent. Some people are intimidated by the landlord. Some of them are older. Some of them are people who don't plan on being here very long, so they don't think it's worth it. But, of course, that means that all of those apartments are removed from being affordable. And that's a huge problem that no politician is looking into.
Anne, thank you so much for your call. And I guess people in similar situations should find themselves a housing advocate and maybe do what you did and see if you can sue your landlord and keep it from being illegally destabilized. Thanks so much for your calls. You can continue commenting on our webpage. Click on the Brian Lehrer Show at WNYC.org. Coming up, is a recession good for your waistline? Stay tuned.
How are we gonna pay? How are we-